Hey, Lowell.
Can we check this real quick? Is this what it is?
That sounds pretty good.
17 and walk through. Walk through a very painful time. And my heart really hardened. So inside my soul, my heart, whatever you call it, it was like a rock. And when I left there, I decided that one decision that I made, and the only one that I can remember, is I will never allow a woman to rule me in any way. Probably a lot of guys running around like me, but that was what I came out with. And so I left, and out into the world, I said, I'm going to make enough money to be able to fund myself so that I can control the women of my life and the rest of it. I can do that. So I left, I went to back home, and I went with a friend, and I moved to Florida. It was in Florida where I actually began my career in tennis and met another gal down there, a girl, young lady, and we got together and she found herself pregnant. So I don't know how that happened, but she found herself pregnant and I had my son. And so my business was in Florida, and then I would go to New York in the summertime for 3 months, and I'd go back and forth. So as it worked out, this child was raised up, he was born, and I felt the right thing to do was to have this child. So I did, and gave him my name, and I thought that everything would work out well, and I would get a divorce. And sure enough, I had my second child. So there I was with two. And I was in Florida with two children, and I was trying to figure out my life and suffering in not a good way. But my heart even got harder. It was more like a rock. And so I ended up marrying her, and my big opportunity came to go to Atlanta to get the job that I was hoping I'd get to. I was at the Lions Tennis Club in Atlanta, right next to the governor's mansion. Jimmy Carter, who became the president, was one of my students, and I was with the top people of Atlanta, and I had the Lions Club in Atlanta, and I built it from 150 families to 600 families. So it was a huge undertaking, and I felt like I was going to win the world. And it, as it turned out, I went through a divorce here in Atlanta with my two children. And it was a very painful divorce. It wasn't, I guess all divorces were painful, but this particular was my divorce. It was really extremely painful. And it came to a place where I was going to get custody of my children because my wife had some issues. And so, I was in a bar one night and I met Donna. And we kind of hit it off pretty well. And, we kind of liked each other. And so when it came time for me to take custody, I said to her, would you consider marrying me? And she had seen my W-2 form. And so she looked at me and she said, well, I think I will. And I said, well, she said, I work with some psychiatrists, I think I can take care of kids. So I took my two children, and Donna and myself, and we moved into another house in Atlanta. And I started all over again. We also had a nanny that took care of the children. And so the five of us moved in there again, and it was a terrible mess. I came home, and everyone had a problem. And there was no one that didn't have a problem. And my heart, again, continued to harden. And that was like a rock. I would leave my job some days, and it would feel like my rock was bleeding, if you can imagine. So this is deep pain. And we're going to be talking this week about pain, suffering, whatever. So this was my pain as a lost person. And so as the process went along, Donna happened to marry, involved with a man in her work that hired her, who called himself a Christian businessman. I had never heard of such a thing, a Christian businessman. So I said to her, so does he wear robes, like a robe? No, so he just wears the pants like a regular guy. I said, wow, so what is that? And so she told me, she said, he's just a man that is a Christian and he runs the company. So I said, well, that to me sounded pretty weird. And so I said, well, maybe we ought to get out of there. That's ridiculous. But then she started coming home and she would say things to me like, she doesn't like me to say this, but it's true. She said things like, my boss said that Jesus is coming back and he's going to take all the people that it is with him and the rest of the people are going to stay here. I said, yeah, really? Where'd you get that? So, this is in the Bible. I thought about it for a while and she said, well, you have a Bible? She said, I have one my grandmother gave me when I graduated from high school, but put it under a bunch of books. I think it's in the upstairs in the attic. So she went in there and dug this Bible up and brought it down. It was all, the pages were all stuck together. And I got some tweezers, you know, and pulled it apart and began reading in Matthew. And as I was reading along, I started in Matthew 1, and I started going through this, and I got to Matthew chapter 11. And at this point in my life, everything was going the wrong way. I mean, all my success, everything that did well, everything that I had accomplished was going down the drain. It was 1973, the economy was terrible. My business, I bought all kinds of equipment for my business, and the rains came in, and nobody showed up in the shop. And it was like, now it's the end of February, it's been about the worst 4 months of my life. My boat was up on the lake, I had a 32-foot cruiser up on the lake, and it had thrown a leak. No, sorry, I didn't start. It has thrown a leak. And so I had some apartments I invested in, and they had burned down. My brother and I were in the business together, and he was supposed to pay the insurance on it. It was one thing after another. And I was like the guy sitting in the bathtub with about 12 ping pong balls, trying to keep them all under the water. That's what my life felt like. And it was horrible. And then in my home, I had my ex-wife coming in on me, and I had my new wife, and I had the children and Gloria. And Gloria, who was the kids, I said to her one day, I said, so Gloria, how's it going? And she goes, it's terrible. And she said, she said, I don't like it here. I said, really? She said, what's the problem? I don't know. She said, I don't like your kids. I don't like the kids. The kids are all right. I don't like your wife. And she said, and I don't even like you. So Gloria said, hang in there. No, it's going to get better. So I'm in Matthew 11, I'm trying to paint a picture of where I was at this point. And in Matthew 11, I start reading, I ran into a verse, as I'm reading along, it said, come to me, all you who labor and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. This is amazing. I said, so then I said, this must be God. But at the same time, I've never thought of Jesus, because it was in red, that he was meek and lowly in heart, and I could find rest for my soul in him. And so, if this is true, I'm interested. I'm interested. So that's the best I could do at that point. So I continued reading and went on along. And this process for a while, I So one day I was sitting with him, and I was with the Bible and reading the Bible, and I said, "You know, God, I've got this situation going on that nothing in my life is changing." And it was like, "Dave, you need to change." Kind of voice came up to me. So I said, "Well, I don't know. I really don't know what to do with all this. I don't know how to change. I don't know what to change. I don't know what to do." So this voice said to me, "Well, why don't you invite my son into your life?" And I said, "I can't do that." I said, I don't really believe in resurrection. Because I've gotten to this point, I started thinking about the resurrection. And I said, "I don't believe that." I said, "What's the problem?" This is a conversation. "What's the problem?" I said, "Well, the problem is I don't see how that could happen because of the probably moved the rock and he went somewhere else, you know. They figured some way to get him out of there." God said to me, "You think I could raise my son from the dead?" I said, "Yeah, you got it. You can do that." He said, "I did." I sat back and I said, "Well, I believe in that. I believe it. So I said, "Well," I said, "now you can come into my kingdom." I said, "No, Lord, I really can't. I can't do that either."
I was a newborn baby, 37 years old, like a
new home. And so what God was doing, which I'm learning much later, what God was doing in this process, is he had a plan to teach me, myself and God also, to teach us and prepare us ahead. That was the day that he started. And just to give you a little picture of what I think goes on with Christ and with God in heaven, I think it's kind of like before the earth was formed, before there was a formation, I think God and his son, Jesus, were out there where they lived. And he came to Jesus one day and he said, you know, I've decided to create the earth. I want to create the earth. I told Jesus all about it and got together and talked to him. So I'm going to start with, we're going to have a man on the earth. His name's going to be Adam. And Adam is going to fail. He's going to be fallen. And he said, but we're going to have a plan that we're going to put together here, you and me. And we're going to restore him back to ourselves. So we're going to have all these people. Many of these people are going to want to be with us in heaven for the eternity. And then a lot of people are not going to want to. But we're going to use this thing called suffering. And we're going to have a mind. So I think it would be best if you would be the model. And you're going to be down here and you're going to go to this earth and you're going to become a man yourself. I'm going to let you become a man. And you're going to yourself, you're going to be about 32 years in that vicinity. And you're going to have to suffer so that they will know what this is all about in their restoration. And when they restore, you're going to have all these brothers and sisters and people going to be yours. And this is going to, then we're going to bring this all together, and then we're going to bring it all to an end at some point. We're going to have a new heaven and a new earth. So, and I think that this is kind of the reason that we do suffer, is that he is preparing us for this future that he has prepared. There's, eye has not seen, ears not heard. All that God has prepared for those who love him. And we don't have any idea, really, what that means. I have no idea. No idea what it means. But I know him. On that day when I went to the floor, and I got up, I said one thing to God. I said, you know, I don't know who you are, but I don't know you. I don't know you. Who are you? I didn't even know who he was. And he'd done this. So I began the process at that point of getting to know him. And I think in this this love that God has for us, God, we know God is love. That's his whole character, love. So he can't do anything but love. And so as a result of that, he begins the process in us. Can you put that thing up for me? Actually have an overhead that I can do. I'm not very good with overhead, so okay. Be patient with me. I'll talk to you while I'm doing that. So this love that he has, okay, thanks. The characteristic of a moral order is a thing called agape love. And there's three Greek words that are translated from the English word love. One is eros, which is love between the sexes. And philios, which is love of the friendship, which is brotherly love. And then agape, which characterizes God himself. And then underneath is the process that we go through. My pain is, what do I do with my pain? It's the big issue. And all suffering begins in pain. I I still have pain with my wife after all these years. All of a sudden something will happen and I'll feel this tweak of pain. Ooh, the pain just came up. What are we going to do with this? Well, I used to handle it in a terrible way, a really bad way. But little by little, I began to realize I can suffer through this pain. I can choose to suffer. I don't have to respond to this pain necessarily. And I have the power to do that. And what this does from that point, it begins to humble me to the point where I become humbled by it. I can't do anything with it. And then, at that point, God's love begins to show up, which is in the godly love. Now, we use the word love. We use the word love for an ice cream cone. I love ice cream. I love to play tennis. I love to play pickleball. I love my wife. I love the dog. So this is all, in English, this is all the same word. But now when we get to this, these three pieces of love, this is what takes place. Now agape love is the love which loves because of its own inherent nature. That's why it loves. There is no reason other than that. It's its nature to love. It's God's love. So that's what we are learning, and that's where we're headed in all this. And it's going to make a difference in eternity. My friend Walt Tennyson used to say that our life here, everything in our life here, is going to affect the way that we spend eternity. So living here, people say, oh, become a Christian. Great. What does that mean? I mean, it means, to us, it means something, someone's a believer or not a believer. But that's really just the beginning. God has we have here a timeline that goes from birth to death. And then we see in the middle of that timeline, we have received Christ in the middle of that timeline. But God sees the whole picture. So he's got the whole deal work. He doesn't have time because he's not in time. So the process that we have, as we're in it, we say this happened here at this point. Well, not necessarily with God. But we're now learning for this place that we're going to spend eternity in. And there's also a ramp there. Because it's just like the world is here. We have people that are at this level, we have people here, we have people everywhere. And there's a ramp and a system that's involved. But it'll be the same in heaven. Now, I can't tell you God's random system or how it works it or where you be. I can't tell you that. Even myself, I have no idea. But there is one. And as we go further into the week, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about that and the energy, hopefully. And go along there a little bit further. So, pain, does that make sense? Pain, suffering, humility, and love. Now, I'll make one more statement before closing. I don't want to be here much longer than this. I think all addictions are a result of not understanding how to suffer. All addictions. I think that. I could be wrong, you could refute it. But what happens is the pain of our youth and growing up, the things that happen to us, and we're going to go into some of that tomorrow, is really deep. And so now I have Christ in my life, but I have all this stuff. All this is in here too. And God wants me to learn how to love. And that is, man, that's a long way away, you know, from that day to moving through 47 years. But the process of what he's doing is he's got something ahead that he's working on in with us. And the purpose of suffering starts to come to light because this is what he's ordained. And so when I buy into his plan, it makes things a lot easier. I don't have to fight it. I don't have to fix it. I don't really have to almost be involved with it. I can just free up and let it happen. Because I realized I couldn't control my kids, I couldn't control no control over anything. It's life went along. The further it went, the less control I realized I had. And so freedom really is moving into this place of thinking, which is learning to suffer. And from that, God brings about humility and love. So I have a couple minutes. I don't have all the answers to everything, but if anyone has something that I have, yeah,
Dave. Dave, I was trying to catch that quote. You said all addictions are, and I couldn't quite catch
all it. All addictions are a process, also I use the word process, through an unwillingness to suffer. So in other words, what happens is with the addiction, I am feeling real bad in here. I've got this rock that I have, and I don't know what to do with it, and it hurts. So I think I'll have two steaks tonight, but I'll eat all the food there is in the world, or I think I'll go down and get some, margaritas. We're talking about full margaritas. So you end up with the process of this, and what we're doing is numbing the pain. Pain is getting numb, but I'm not willing to suffer through it, and I don't know how to suffer through it. So, and I don't know why I would even want to. So see, this is what we're bringing here, is purposefulness to this suffering also. Does that help me?
Yeah, thanks.
If you understand, see, a lot of what we're doing this week, my hope is understanding. You know, my people don't understand. I didn't understand. So bringing understanding to this is really an amazing accomplishment if we do, if we're able to get there. That would be really great. Any others?
Yeah, I got one. Yeah. So one of the goals of discipleship is maturing in your faith. And is it fair to say, or are you starting to kind of paint the picture that seeing suffering from God's perspective is going to offer us additional capacity to thrive and do it?
Yeah, I said so. I think, you know, meeting with men, if I don't get to their pain, I miss the whole thing. And so I meet with men one-on-one, a lot of one-on-one relationships that I have. If I don't get to their pain, we're all people, we don't go anywhere. So I've got to be skillful enough as a disciple maker to get to the pain of the individual. I can miss people totally.
It is, but I guess I'm interested in hearing more about God's design.
We're going to do that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like 3 months. What's his viewpoint of this? That's what I was
going to say.
Okay.
So Dave, on your pain, suffering, humility, love track there, are you kind of saying that at the in between the pain and the suffering steps, that if you don't choose to enter the suffering and deal with it, maybe learn how to deal with it in some healthy way, I guess, then you're probably not going to experience the humility and the love if you don't deal with the suffering?
Pretty hard thing. Yeah, really. I mean, this is the design. Christ did not come here and do what he did for no reason. I mean, for us not to learn, or for us to be one of his. And expect, I'm in comfort. I'll take a cigar or a margarita, put me down by the beach in a chair. It's awesome. I'm comfortable there. Especially a good woman like my wife. That's how I, my whole life is designed for comfort, but it's not about comfort. But comforting does has a role in this. We're going to get to that too. It does have a role. Yeah, Jerry.
Dave, can you share from your experience, once you came to this revelation, what you're explaining here, is it easy to perceive or is it something you need to be daily reminded of, or is this event-driven? Every time you're suffering, you're like, oh yeah, that. Can you explain your, share with your own journey of how the maturity of this has come to be in your life?
Well, it's process-oriented. It's joyful for me. I've been learning through my relationships, through my children, through my life. And it's come about from this in the scriptures. So, and that's basically, it revolves from. It's just a process, George. I think of the day that happened 34 years ago when I met Christ to where it is now. It's been changing and evolving into this process. And this is called, this is the sanctification process, by the way. So this is what God does. It's all through the scriptures. So I'm explaining it to you in human terms so that we can all understand it. I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. I didn't understand the purpose of it. I did not know where God was. I didn't know anything. So this has been all process oriented. And now I'm able to. I'm living it for quite a while, so I can talk about it.
So you think each one, there's a number of different pain and suffering that you experience. Each one is a opportunity to do better. In the last, so like you walk through it in a more mature way, and so I mean, is that yes. Part of the purpose behind it?
Yes, that does happen. You're going to see this during the week. I'm going to share this, how it has worked. So when I get to the end, it's not like a formula, but it is a process. You can't put God and people in a box, you can't box it. But yeah, this is how it works.
I just think look at the life of Jesus, and he had pain coming to this earth, and you look at it like if I was to put myself before my children and they just treated me the way that his creation treated him, that's the pain and then the suffering of walking through them with that, and the humility of going to the cross for us. You did one. And when you think about your life of doing 7, 8, 9, 10 major different sufferings or whatever it is, each one, we don't do it perfectly. And so each one is like an opportunity.
Yeah, it is. What Paul said is this is a growing process. I'm going to open it up for you so you can take a look at it. But it's how it works. But it's very purposeful, and God has a real purpose in it. And I think, to realize that his purpose is eternal. See, he's an eternal God. We're a temporal people. We're an eternity here, but we're in a temporal world. So it's difficult for us to connect to what this is. A little bit difficult. But he's very purposeful. God is, he's got on each one of us. He's working with each one of us, too. Where do you do this? This is amazing. It's amazing. And I look across the Revelation of Revelation, I look across the street, to the next passage over there, and he's got like thousands, and this is all over, thousands and thousands of people that his Father brings in to be with him. And it's amazing, so how can you be interested in one little individual like me? How can that be? He said, you've got, how many grandchildren do you have, Dave? I said, I have 13. 13 grandchildren. Do you love them? Yeah, I love them all. You love them all about the same? Yeah, really good. I love them all about the same. Same as me. Same thing. The same thing. He doesn't have written in there. Agape love's not there. It's all there. Okay. Thank you.
That's a good one.